योगेन चित्तस्य पदेन वाचां बलं शरीरस्य च वैद्यकेन योपाकरोत्तं प्रवरं मुनीनां पतञ्जलिं प्राञ्जलिरानतोऽस्मि स्तुवेयि पतञ्जलिं व्यासं शङ्करं च मुनित्रयं कर्तृसूत्रस्य भाष्यस्य क्रमाद्विवरणस्य च If you remember, we began this discussion from 30th to 35th sutras of the Samadhipada. It's a very interesting subject for discussion. So in the 30th sutra, you find there's a description of some of the obstacles in the form of psychological obstacles, distractions that we may encounter when we take to yoga. Now, when we use this word yoga or when we use this expression taking to yogic life, it should be understood in a very broad sense, not just practicing physical exercises or going to a yoga studio or joining a yogic camp. What it means in the broad sense of the word is taking to higher life. Or when you try to practice a higher ideal in life, well, it depends upon the person. That's why the first sutra of yoga, Yoga Sutra, the first one, the first of the 195 sutras, Atha Yoga Anushasana. This is the first sutra. What it means is something very interesting. Atha literally in Sanskrit, it means from now onwards, henceforth, from now onwards. What does it signify? Well, there are different ways of looking at this meaning. From a traditional point of view, what it means is after having performed all our duties and responsibilities in our life, empirical life, when we feel a need for a higher ideal to guide our activities, and when we practice a kind of renunciation, a dispassion for these worldly pleasures, when we try to aspire for, let us what we call spiritual liberation, it means different things. Maybe for a Christian, it's taking religion more seriously, or maybe kingdom of God, let us say, or for a Buddhist, nirvana, it's called. From a Hindu standpoint, what you call liberation or moksha. These are all traditional technical interpretations. When you think of this higher ideal in life. But there are different levels of interpretation of this word. Well, I should try to put it in the context of our times, 21st century. Let us say you have got a very wonderful job. You worked hard, you did very well in the university, you had a good grade, you got a good job, well-paying job, worked for 30 years, maybe longer, and you have already done all your duties and responsibilities to your family, different members, even to grandchildren, have a good bank balance, social security, can perhaps spend the rest of lifetime in Hawaii, if possible. When all these things, all these resources you have accomplished, and then you feel, well, there is something more I should aspire for, which is an aspiration that really makes our life meaningful, give our life a higher meaning and significance. In fact, out of this aspiration only, great philosophers, great mystics, and great literary giants have sprung. Then you think of a higher ideal in life. Of course, this cannot happen to everyone. Those who have done the duties and responsibilities, have led a law-abiding life, nothing to worry about now, still feeling a need for something higher, which money cannot buy. Something higher which you cannot get by becoming the most, famous by becoming the most famous scientist or banker, financier, or politician. Still, something is left wanting within. At this stage, you think of a higher way of life. Well, it can, as I mentioned, you know, it could mean different things for different people. In the conservative traditional circles, it could mean, well, getting a vision of God, getting a higher... Well, that word will have a very, very misleading interpretation in modern times. You know, God has a different sense in the yogic Vedantic tradition. God in Vedanta means one all-pervading, omnipresent, divine reality that's present in all of us. And one that's not something that we get, that we have to seek outside of us, but rather that we can realize as immanent, present within all of us by leading a pure life, by practicing self-control, dispassion for worldly achievements, and a great passion for some higher universal spiritual values that makes you look upon, that enables you to look upon the whole existence as one spiritual family. It's not that allegiance to a particular God and a total disregard for everything else, not at all. It's something much higher. That's what realization of God actually means in Vedanta. So in that sense, anyone can be Vedantin. Anyone who wants to be pure, who wants to be universal, who wants to practice nonviolence, who wants inner peace, tranquility, by giving peace to others. Well, this is the real meaning of yoga in Vedanta. So this desire for a higher spiritual paradigm, a higher pursuit of life, this is what naturally comes to a person, a noble person, a noble-hearted person, you know, who has already done all his duties and responsibilities, or his or her duties and responsibilities. He's a noble person. So if you have all the best things of this world going on in your favor, nothing really to achieve in terms of empirical material pleasures, still you feel a kind of you feel a need for something higher, then you are in distinguished company. That's what really gives us a Buddha or a Christ or Ramakrishna Paramahamsa. Buddha happened. That's what happened to Buddha. A prince who was leading luxurious life was not allowed to see a beggar or sickness or death or any misery in life. Suddenly, when he was 28 years old, happened to see a dead body taken in a procession to the burial ground, saw the face of a sick man, and saw an old man suffering misery of old age, and also saw the face of a sage who was not bothered about anything, who had his eyes fixed on some higher idea, yoga. So Buddha felt the need for something higher, which his father could not give him for 28 years. So he left and became Buddha. That's the story. I don't go into the detail. I have narrated this incident many times. Now the point is, when you take to this yoga, then you become a practitioner of yoga. Incidentally, I can quote one important verse, which is in Pali language. You know, Pali is a kind of corrupted form of Sanskrit. Sanskrit means the purified language. That's literally what it means. Sanskrit means refinement, purification, and so on. Pali was the language of the masses, of the common people, in which Buddha spoke and taught and preached. So there is an interesting verse in the Dhammapada, which you can get from any good bookshop. You know, it's translated into English. So this verse is this: Suprabuddham prabhujyanti sada Gautama savakaha yesam divo narattu chahimsayam rato mano. Is a corrupted form of Sanskrit. The Sanskrit form is Suprabuddham prabhujyanti sada Gautama savakaha yesam divacharatru chahimsayam rato manaha. This is meaning. What it means is the disciples of Buddha, Gautama, are always enlightened, and they always enjoy inner peace and happiness because they practice non-violence. They practice yoga. They practice inner peace and tranquility by giving to others inner peace and tranquility. They themselves experience this. This is an interesting statement found in the Dhammapada. Now, what I mean to say, so this experience is called Chitta Prasada, or inner tranquility in yogic, in the context of yoga. So when you feel this higher aspiration, you are looking for something which money cannot buy, which the richest and the most powerful man or woman in this world cannot really enjoy, but it may be accessible to a poor person who is leading a humble life. So it is a kind of inner spiritual tranquility. So how to achieve this tranquility? That is that pursuit, that investigation, that search, that's called yoga. Now, I just in the last few sessions, I gave a list of some of the obstacles that everyone may have to face in his or her life when you try to look for something higher, when you begin your spiritual journey in a very broad sense. At the beginning of spiritual journey, all of us will have to face some problems. Now, these problems are explained in the traditional monotheistic circles as some mechanisms of mischiefs of a devil or a Satan. But Patanjali says it is really not so. It's a matter of our mind. So if you practice certain inner virtues, values, we can get rid of these problems. The danger of putting the whole blame on a devil is we need not do anything. We can worship God and also hate everyone else in the world, because the devil is responsible. We are not responsible. But yoga tells you have a responsibility. Your responsibility is that you should become a good human being. Without becoming a good human being, you cannot be a devotee of God in any tradition. So the greatness of yoga is it puts the whole blame on your shoulders. You cannot escape. Otherwise, in monotheistic traditions, then popular Hinduism, in the Brahmic religions, you know, this devil is tempting me, so I'm not responsible. So all the sins, everything, I don't want to go to original sin, you know, the theological baggage, I don't want to, the whole file I cannot take up now. The whole point is, yoga tells you, you can solve your problems if you look into your own mind. So if you decide to become a good, noble, loving, compassionate, sympathetic human being, then you can be spiritual and you can be a devotee of God, and there is no other way, which means you cannot worship God on the one hand and hate anybody else outside. So the list of these distractions, I already given, 30th sutra of the Samadhipada gives a list. Vyadhi, sthyana, samsaya, pramada, alasya, aviradhi, brandi, darsana, അലബ്ധഭൂമികത്വ അനവസ്ഥിതത്വാനി ചിത്തവിക്ഷേപാഹത്തെ അന്തരായാഹ. ഐ ഓൾറെഡി ഡിസ്കസ് ദിസ്, ഐ വോണ്ട് ഗോ ഇൻ ടു ഡീറ്റെയിൽസ്. സോ ദിസ് ഇസ് ദ ഫസ്റ്റ് സൂത്ര ഓഫ് ദിസ് പെർട്ടിക്കുലർ സെക്ഷൻ. ഇറ്റ് ഓൾറെഡി 5-6 സൂത്രാസ് ടുഗദർ ഫോം വൺ പെർട്ടിക്കുലർ ഇമ്പോർട്ടൻറ്റ് ഡിസ്കഷൻ ഇൻ ദി യോഗ കോണ്ടെക്സ്റ്റ്. The obstacles, the distractions, the problems that you may have to encounter once you step into spiritual life, and how to go ahead without being affected by these obstacles and distractions. Disease, it could be in the form of, it could be physical illness, it could be a kind of languor, it can be indecision, skepticism, carelessness, laziness, the influence of the early samskaras or impressions, love for worldly things, and then wrong notions it could be. And you find spiritual seekers often fall victims to delusions. There are many spiritual leaders also being victims. So I am going to deems. That's why Vivekananda makes an interesting point. If anyone tells you that he's inspired, ever seen God or something, and is found to be cruel, monstrous, capable of being unsympathetic, being cruel to any living being, it is not inspiration. So it could be some kind of a delusion. Delusions are very common among spiritual seekers. In fact, Patanjali's greatness, he points out this. If you want examples, you can go to this history of inquisitions. there are many witch hunting, there are many things which we don't want to deal with, those subjects, the whole history of religions, the Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, all full of such examples, all religious traditions. So delusions, wrong ideas, wrong notions. And again, you practice meditation, prayer, or spiritual practices, then you feel that you are not making any progress. You make some progress, but suddenly you are not stable in your effort to make progress. These are some of the obstacles. Okay, now these obstacles have got some other side effects also, byproducts. So it's given dukkha, daumanasya, angamejayatva, shwasa prashwasa, vikshepa, sahabhuvaha. And again, we have covered these portions. Along with these distractions, pain, despair, a kind of wrong notions, overexcitement, or lethargy, all these can come. And then in the 31st Sutra, Patanjali gives an example. Focusing our mind on a single spiritual ideal can help us by preventing these distractions, because all our energies can be diverted towards one higher goal. It need not necessarily be related to spirituality or religion. See, that's why you find people who take to, I mentioned this earlier, big industrial captains, big businessmen, sometimes they feel a need to do some charitable work and put their whole energy and time on one ideal. It's not necessarily a spiritual practice, but focusing on a single ideal and diverting all our energy resources towards a higher ideal will have this effect of reducing distractions and obstacles. Then in the 33rd, that's why Maitri, Karuna, Mudita, Ubekshanam, Sukhadukha, Punya, Apunya, Vishayanam, Bhavanataha, Chitta Prasadaram. One of the most important verses in the entire Pada Yoga tradition. It's very interesting. Here, Patanjali is anticipating what all problems we may encounter when we interact with our fellow human beings in our day-to-day life situations. So all possible human emotions, what do we call negativity of human mind, It can be, all these are different manifestations of negativity. So negativity can manifest in the form of lethargy, lack of concentration, lack of focus. But negativity can be much more dangerous. Sometimes negativity can be rooted in some strong psychological fixations, which can be painful not only to us but also to others. So how to get ahead, how to get rid of these problems? Very interesting, a very famous sutra. So maitri, one is friendliness. We should be friendly with whom? With other spiritual seekers. So if we can keep ourselves as far as possible in the company of other spiritual seekers, that's one very assured way of reducing distractions. So if you analyze this sutra, you find all the human beings, all life situations we encounter in our life belong to one of these categories, or all of these categories. So there are some people who are fellow spiritual seekers. It could be a professor talking to another professor in a university. It could be a doctor talking to another doctor in the hospital. These are all examples, not necessarily in spiritual life, but ordinary human life situations. So even in secular interactions, we can be spiritual. It is not that spirituality is something that is that's a special kind of life. Spirituality is not a special kind of life. Life should not be taken in fragments. Life should be taken as a whole. Because our human mind, our tendencies, our attitudes, our emotions, they all are interrelated and interdependent. They all form parts of one integral whole. So how we interact with people in the workplace or maybe in different life situations, that can affect our spiritual life. That's why spiritual life is not just a life of prayer. Spiritual life should be taken as a matter it's a totality of human life situations. So those who are good people, people whose associations will not cause conflicts in our mind, we should be friendly with them. That's one effective way of testing. You find some people, the conversation, even the presence will create conflicts. It's not that they have a banner on their head, nothing, but you judge a person on the basis of your previous life experiences. Not that you should be hostile, but the point is, in fact, Patanjali deals with that situation in the coming statement. So we should be friendly with people of our own type, fellow spiritual seekers. Then karuna means sympathy, compassion. There are people who want to lead good life, who may be unfortunate. They are in need of sympathy. If you have contempt for those who are less fortunate than us, that contempt will create a dark force, not dark force in physics, a kind of dark impression, attitude. A very, very unfortunate, very undesirable attitude in our mind. And that could darken our outlook on life. So we should not have contempt for others who are less fortunate, when we meet people of different types, some people are not so well informed, we should not have an attitude of contempt for them. So we should have, karuna means sympathy, compassion. Patanjali is giving some recommendations for experiencing inner blessedness, tranquility, and peace. It's called Chitta Prasadanam, which is the subject of discussion in these sutras. We already discussed this earlier. Those who are interested can hear, watch the previous classes in the YouTube or live stream. The mudita, that means, you know, admiration. There are people who are more fortunate than us, more gifted, more advanced. We should not have jealousy or envy. We should not be shy of appreciating the merits of others. When we admire something in others, actually we get those qualities. You can find, you know, in the ordinary life situations, those who admire children you find in school, those who admire boxing champions, they want to be boxing champions. Those who admire footballers, they want to be footballers. So what we admire in others, we admire in others because we want those qualities in ourselves. We may not be able to have those qualities, we may not be able to acquire those qualities, but we have a sincere desire to acquire those qualities for ourselves. So we admire them. So when we encounter in our different life situations people who are more advanced, then we should have sincere appreciation, admiration for those people. And then there is a fourth category, upekshana. So there are those whose association, I mean interaction with whom, could create conflict or skepticism and doubt, and can shatter our faith, can disturb our pattern of life. We should keep a long distance from them. It may not be possible physically for anyone to choose he's the right person or wrong person. We cannot do that. So Patanjali is not so foolish as to recommend that we should make a thorough analysis of every human being we meet, not at all. In the street, in the workplace, in the factory, not at all. What he is driving home is, we should keep this in mind. Upeksha here means kind of indifference. Indifference is not hostility. Indifference is neither hostility nor friendship. Mentally, when we have to encounter people whose attitude, outlook on life is totally different from our outlook, we should not confront them, or we should not be hostile or antagonize them. What we should do, mentally, we must use a filtering mechanism. Filtering mechanism means, once we feel, well, our path is different, our way of life is different. So once we remember this, we won't quarrel with them. Of course, even antagonism or hostility will bring you into conflict with the undesirable, with people with undesirable attitudes. And of course, for obvious reasons, you should not be too friendly. What you should do, we should keep a kind of Patanjali. Not Patanjali doesn't say that, but the commentators say, we must form a kind of inner filtering mechanism, psychological filtering mechanism, which means leave out all undue associations, not physically, but we should say, well, our path is different. So what he is recommending before us is a mechanism, a method of living in this world, wherever we are, not necessarily in the temple or a church or a synagogue, even the workplace, even in the office, whatever may be our profession or work. Still, we can face different life situations and still remain unaffected by any distractions. Through this, he says, Chitta Prasadanam, you will be able to enjoy inner peace and tranquility. In fact, that's what Buddha was referring to, you know, in the, what he says, Suprabuddham Prabhujyande Sada Gautama. If you practice this inner non-violence, inner mind control, in fact, some of these verses constitute the theological foundation of what is now known as mindfulness. All these statements coming in the Dhammapada are also related to one well-known discourse that Buddha gave. It's called Satyupattana Sutta. It is a sukta, means a long hymn with different various verses, which is a long poem in which the historians, Buddha's interpreters or exponents of Buddhism have recorded the teachings in different verses in the Pali canonical literature. Pali is a kind of, a more primitive form of Sanskrit. That's what it is. So that's the 33rd sutra. Now, in the 34th sutra, potentially gives a very interesting exposition. That's what we are going to discuss. Again, we already discussed, but it's very important. That is, the sutra is very famous. It is Prachardana Vidharana Abhyam Va Pranasya. It deals with the pranayama, breathing exercises of different types. Though Patanjali doesn't give a detailed exposition of breathing exercises, still the commentators who wrote on this verse have elaborately commented. And later yoga texts like Hatha Yoga Pradipika, Swatmananda Saraswati, so Swamiji who wrote this famous document of pranayama and hatha yoga postures in the 15th century, he wrote elaborately on different aspects of breathing exercise called pranayama. Now, I have to, to make the point more clear, I have to refer to some statements from the original Sanskrit commentaries on the Yoga Sutras. So, Vyasa is the original commentator on Patanjali Yoga Sutras. So, he makes a statement, Tadascha chittam prasidati prasannam ekagram sthitipadam labhati. He is writing in his commentary on this 33rd sutra, which I discussed just now. That is, we must practice friendliness, friendly attitude towards fellow spiritual seekers, admiration for those who are more advanced than us, compassion and sympathy for those who are not as advanced in spiritual life as us, and also total indifference towards those whose association could create problems for us in our spiritual life by creating doubts, skepticism, and also what you call negativity. Negativity is as contagious as flu or cholera or anything. This is not an exaggeration. Maybe a doctor may not agree with me, but maybe a psychologist may agree with me, psychiatrist. Negativity can be very contagious. You live with people who question everything. First, you may fight with him, with that person. You may not agree. No, you are wrong, sir. But if you mix with people of that type, and if you're friendly with them, too much of intimate contact, then negativity can be contagious. But it doesn't mean that there is no solution for this. So that's why Patanjali says indifference, keeping a long distance. Not physically, mentally. You know, you heard of the photo, Neville Chamberlain and Hitler shaking hands in the 1938 treaty. You know, Hitler is also smiling. The British Prime Minister is also smiling. And within months, you know, Poland, Czechoslovakia, all you can imagine. So such things happen in this world. So for wrong reasons, people with evil tendencies, evil attitudes, can practice this kind of indifference, you know. You smile nicely, but your mind is different. So the point is, in spiritual life, we need not hate anyone, because even hating evil people is harmful to us mentally. That's why Patanjali uses the word upeksha. The word Sanskrit word is upeksha. That's our attitude towards people whose association could be spiritually harmful to us. It is not friendliness. It is not hostility. Because even hostility, antagonism, or hatred can be subject, at the subjective level, be very harmful. As harmful as friendship with the wrong person. So what we must do, our mind should attain a kind of indifference. People who do this for wrong reasons, I'm giving the example, historical example. Okay. So that's why, Vyasa says, if you practice this, you can practice concentration. So he says, ekagram sthiripadam labhade, you can attain one-pointedness. One-pointedness means total freedom from distraction. So the opposite of distraction is one-pointedness, called ekagrita, means, ekagra literally means, agra means point. It one. If it is a huge thing, you know, if it's something very blunt, it can create distraction. So when mind is established in this inner stability and peace and tranquility, then it's totally free from distractions or obstacles in the form of distractions. So it can feel stability and peace and inner blessedness and concentration. So Vijnana Bhikshu was the one who commented, who explained Vyasa statements. So he says, Bhavananam Chitta Prasade Dwaramaha Evam Asyeti. According to this commentator, who is called Vijnana Bhikshu, according to some scholars, he was a Buddhist. The book he wrote is called Yoga Vartikam. It is a commentary on Vyasa's commentary in Sanskrit. So he says, these four techniques are like doors, entrance for acquiring inner stability and peace and blessedness. Because if you are not friendly with fellow spiritual seekers, your spiritual attitudes will not be enriched. So the best way to reinforce our own spiritual aspirations is to interact with people with identical views and identical attitudes. So that's why people of the same professions, they discuss, because each will learn from the other. And then again, so that's one attitude, positive self-enrichment, by practicing friendliness towards other spiritual seekers. Then sympathy for those who are not so advanced as us. We should not have contempt. We should not have a kind of looking down upon others who are spiritually maybe not very, want to know but are less fortunate than us. We should have sympathy for them. And then we should have admiration for those who are more advanced. Instead of jealousy or envy, we should have admiration. So when we admire a good quality in others, indirectly we will acquire those qualities. When we contempt for a person for a weakness, we will inherit that weakness. When we admire somebody for a great quality, we also will inherit that quality. Because we will try to make our effort to achieve those qualities. That's what happens. So that's why, you know, admiration, appreciation for those who are more advanced than us. And then, of course, total indifference for those whose association can be harmful to our own spiritual life. So now, from 34th sutra, as I mentioned earlier, Patanjali is giving another option. That is, through breathing exercise also you can acquire stability. That's an interesting thing. Now, you know, you have to this sutra needs a lot of explanation. So as Vivekananda wrote extensively on this sutra, because he was trying to interpret this sutra to the modern world. So you find many flashlights, Vivekananda's interpretation, that you don't find the traditional commentaries, because Swamiji, so Vivekananda, who wrote for the first time as an authority on Yoga Sutras, you know, his interpretation, there he throws some very interesting flashlights on this. The sutra is this, as I mentioned, you know, prachardhana vidharanabhyam va pranasya. There is another way, another method for acquiring stability, tranquility, inner peace, chitta prasadana. That is through breathing exercises. So how do you relate breathing exercises to mental stability? So I mentioned this earlier. The first important principle is before anyone starts practicing this pranayama, breathing exercise, he or she should be established in 10 disciplines. Now, one may ask this, if you read a list, then you may stop going to yoga studio tomorrow. It doesn't mean that. Even an intellectual understanding of these disciplines will help us to be aware of certain dangers so that we'll be able to avoid. So that's why Patanjali, at the beginning of his Ashtanga Yoga, he is talking about Yama and Niyama. Yama are very deep internal disciplines. Ahimsa, Satya, Asteya, Brahmacharya, Abharigraha, these are the five yamas. That means non-violence, truthfulness, then non-stealing of other people's properties. That's what literally it means, but it's got some interpretation. And purity of life, chaste life, and also non-receiving of gifts. These are five disciplines. Now here you find freedom from violent tendencies, violent words, violent activities. Freedom from greed, a kind of inner contentment. Because if we are greedy, if we are looking for others, then all the efforts that we do will be diverted towards them. You know why it's important? Breathing exercises will generate heat and energy. Physical energy and also psychological energy. So these energy resources will hyperactivate our dormant tendencies, good or bad. Heat and energy will be generated. So a person who is of a violent tendency, if he practices, you can imagine what the problem it will be if he practices breathing exercises. Because breathing exercises will hyperactivate some of the nervous system, and mental, and it improves your concentration. So before you sharpen your mind by improving concentration, then our tendencies should be trained properly. Our attitudes and emotions and natural tendencies should be refined so that we'll be doing only good things with this newly generated energy resources. So also greed. If a greedy person becomes gifted with many of these natural powers that you develop as a result of even physical activity, what happens, you know, he becomes more greedy. So whatever may be your natural characteristics and tendencies will get a promotion, will become sharpened by practicing pranayama. So Patanjali says, these powers, these gifts, these skills you develop as a result of breathing exercises should be diverted to creative, constructive channels and not to destructive channels. For that, you know, you should block the negative channels. So when you practice non-violence, violent tendencies in the form of words, deeds, actions, and attitudes all will be properly restrained. So also greed, desire for possessing other people's things, all will be properly restrained. And then you can practice pranayama. Then we will, that pranayama will be a great help in acquiring inner stability. Otherwise, in a bipolar problem is very common among those who do extensive pranayama very often. This happened to many people, great exponents of Yoga Sutra who came later after Vivekananda, like Swami Sivananda Saraswati, Rishikesh, founder of Divine Life Societies, to give warning, strong warning against all this. He was himself a prominent doctor before he became a monk. So that's what. Then the second group of qualities necessary for anyone before starting breathing exercises is Shauja Sandosha Tapaswadhyaya Isarpanidhana. It's called Niyamas. So purity, inner purity, mental purity, contentment, feeding our mind with spiritually healthy ideas and a sense of resignation to God, a dedication, resignation to a higher ideal. All these qualities are necessary before taking to breathing exercises. Patanjali, you should remember, is not referring to extensive breathing exercises in this sutra. He doesn't pay much attention to pranayama as a whole. It was developed later by the authors of Hatha Yoga Pradipika, Swami Swatmarananda Saraswati. He wrote extensively on this subject. So prana here is not breathing. Breathing or breath is only a very minute, a very gross manifestation of prana. Prana is nothing but vital force that controls the entire universe and its functions, internal and external functions. The sum total of the whole energy resources manifesting in different forms in this universe is called prana, energy. So that's what we are going to discuss. I shall try to read a very interesting part in Vivekananda's interpretation, exposition of pranayama. So sutra is, as I mentioned, prachardana vidharana bhyam va. Or here the sutra means, if you cannot practice these attitudes which you mentioned earlier, you know, maitri, karuna, mudita, ubeksha, etc., friendliness towards fellow spiritual seekers, sympathy for those who are not so advanced, those who are less fortunate at helping them, and admiration for those who are more advanced, and a total indifference towards those whose association can be harmful to us. So all these constitute one way of trying to acquire stability of mind and inner peace and tranquility. Or there is another method, that is this pranayama. Of course, the sutra doesn't deal with all aspects of pranayama, because normally, you know, you said inhalation is puraga, is called exhalation is rechaga, you breathe in is called puraga, breathe out is rechaga, and then, you know, internal retention is called antakumbhaga, and external retention is called bahikumbhaga, breathing, keeping the breath within and without, etc. These are all different parts of you pranayama. Patanjali doesn't deal with these details. So I shall try to read Vivekananda's very extensive, detailed exposition of what it means and how it should be understood in modern times. That is the speciality of his interpretation, how this prana, pranayama, should be understood in modern times. The word used is prana. Prana is not exactly breath. It is a name for the energy that is in the universe. So the whole cosmic energy, the totality of energy, is called prana. Of course, Swamiji says elsewhere, the prana, there is an interesting discussion of how breath is related to prana. How breath helps us to control our mind and intellect. The example I shall take, it is from Vivekananda. Elsewhere, Swamiji says, a very interesting example. The story is simple. A king had a minister, and perhaps somehow he fell out of the king's grace, and the minister was dismissed. He was put in a prison, put in a tower. It's a prison. And his wife wanted to help him. So what she did, she came and stood below the tower. And when she came, he sent out a message, "You bring these items." You know what are those items? The small insect that crawls through the tower, and a thin thread, the bigger thread attached to it, still a bigger thread, and still much bigger, and some honey. You bring all these items. So the wife, or maybe his assistants, brought all these items. So what they did, they put a drop of honey on the nostrils of this little insect. And, you know, it wants to eat the honey, and the smell is coming, so it is going in search of it. But then, you know, as it started climbing the tower, behind the insect, thin thread and long thread. Behind it, stronger thread. And behind it, a rope. And still behind, maybe bigger rope. Anyway, as the little creature reached the top of the tower, the minister who was imprisoned, he took out the insect and slowly took the thread, and behind the thread, the bigger thread, and behind that, the rope, and behind that, the bigger, stronger rope, and finally, with the help of this rope, he escaped from the prison. Sorry, it's from the tower, the prison. This story goes. So our breath is like the small, tiny, thin breath. Through this breath, we can control our mind, stabilize our mind, and acquire inner stability and tranquility. This is the story which Swami Vivekananda himself has taken from an old illustration. That's what he's referring to. So that should be kept in mind. So breath is only a very gross, finite manifestation of cosmic prana. That's what it is. So whatever you see in the universe, whatever moves or works or has life, is a manifestation of this prana. The sum total of the energy displayed in the universe is called prana. This prana, before a cycle begins, remains in an almost motionless state, and when the cycle begins, this prana begins to manifest itself. So, first there is an avyakta, unmanifest state. And when this unmanifest state begins to manifest in terms of names and forms and space, that means relativity, then this world becomes manifest. So the manifest comes out of the unmanifest. The unmanifest is the source of the manifest. That's how Swamiji explains this. This idea is taken from the Sankhya Yoga metaphysical tradition. It is this prana that is manifested as motion, as nervous motion in human beings or animals. As the gross dimension of prana manifesting as breath in all of us. The whole universe is a combination of prana and akasha. Akasha means space. So is the human body. Out of the akasha or space, you get the different materials that you feel and see, and out of prana, all the various forces. So space and prana. Prana is the cosmic energy. And akasha is space. So in the Taittiriya Upanishad, there is a statement, akasha dvayu, vayu rakni, akne abha, abhyaprudhivyam, prudhivyam oshadeha, oshadevigannam. Like that, you know. What it means is, from space, air, air principle, from that fire, then from that water, and from the water, these forests, mountains, all the material things, herbs, trees, and so on. That's why it is mentioned here. So the whole existence is nothing but a combination of this vital energy, cosmic energy called prana, and space. This prana or energy manifesting within the limited sphere of names, forms, and space. So we'll discuss this subject in the coming class, in the coming session. We can have interaction. We will take up the subject again in the next class, of course.
When, you know, the ancient texts, including the Greeks, had these five elements.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've always wondered, is this like some form of rudimentary chemistry, or is it more some elements that constitute the essence of perception? Is it...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interestingly, you know, Thales, the 7th century Greek philosopher, he believed water is the primitive principle, foundational principle of cosmos. Thales was the first, one of the first among the recorded Greek philosophers. He lived the 6th or 7th century BC. He was a contemporary, in a way, contemporary, elder contemporary of Buddha, according to 6th century. Anyway, so we do not know how to scientifically approach this subject. You find science and metaphysics somehow converts. It did convert in ancient times. How they found out, discovered these principles, at least we do not know. But Sankhya philosophy has an elaborate discussion of the origin of the universe, the evolution of the universe. So it could be one way, kind of, how to metaphysically analyze the origin of the cosmos, because it borders with philosophy. So where science ends, where philosophy begins, modern scientists may not accept this main problem. So this so just keep in mind this interesting principle which Swamiji mentions, which Sankhya philosophers say. This universe manifesting in time, space, and causation is nothing but a finite manifestation of the infinite, so to speak. When the infinite is perceived through these triple dimensions of time, space, and causation, you have this world. The same world, when perceived in its transcendental dimension, infinite dimension, going beyond time, space, and causation, is Brahman. This is Vedantic interpretation. The concept of relativity was perhaps anticipated by ancient Sankhya philosophers. That's what you have to say. It can be... You use the word chemistry in what sense? It's a chemistry of akasha and energy, space and energy. That's what you mean?
No, chemistry I use...
Yeah, in the literal sense. Is it coming together, putting together, joining together, in that? Yeah, it's one way of putting it, yeah. That's all we can say. See, metaphysical analysis of this world, the problem with modern science, which I'm not a scientist, I should admit, the problem of modern science, you know, it is analyzing the created world with its own tools. And the tools should be visible and tangible. So it is using, it is trying to understand the finite world with finite tools. The limited world with limited tools. So the moment you talk about, you link it to something which cannot be proved in terms of the laboratory experiment, then it is condemned as unscientific. So, for example, If you practice breath, if you do pranayama, you get peace of mind. You feel inner peace or some kind. You feel that. But a doctor will tell you it has no connection. But it's something you experience. You get Tylenol and you get fever cured. It's an experience for you. That is recognized. You do pranayama, you do pray, you do prayer, and it works. But that's not recognized. But it is something that you experience. So it's a kind of scientific fanaticism. That's all we can say. If prayer works, it is considered to be superstitious. But if a capsule or a tablet works, it is science, scientific. How does it work? Experience is the criterion for scientific proof. Both are experiences. So, but it is something very interesting. The Indian philosophical systems, there are very interesting analysis of many of these things. What you said is one approach, one way of interpreting it. True. Yeah. Any?
Thank you. Swami. The qualities that you spoke of that are extolled, like admiration, yeah, understanding, compassion, that were interrelated and so forth. I'm just wondering why it's encouraged, maybe even necessary, to do that through a practice of seeking the divine. Why is it not sufficient to understand those, to practice those in a humanistic, a natural, naturalistic way? Is it to seek the divine, which creates more motivation to seek the to be more reverent? What is this kind of Vedanta cosmology?
True. You know, in a way, you're right. See, if we can look upon the whole existence as divine, then why should you use these tools to get inner peace? It is Chitta Prasada is stability. It is not the highest yoga mentioned here. In fact, this is a direct recommendation for spiritual seekers who may encounter problems or distractions when they try to meditate, when they try to pray. See, for example, when spiritual seekers begin to pray or meditate frequently on the divine, or when they try to, suppose tomorrow onwards you look upon the whole world, your brothers, sisters, all love and compassion, like a Buddha or a Christ, wonderful. The point is, but then if you encounter somebody whose words or acts disturb you, may antagonize you, make you angry, make you sad, make you depressed, or maybe get you even excited, the opposite of joy, extreme joy. So that's the reality. So these are some of the problems that spiritual seekers may have to encounter in their everyday spiritual life when they practice it. So when they try to translate a great idea into an actual reality, then very often our natural attitudes and impressions and samskaras may create disturbances, distractions. So tomorrow onwards, I shall be compassionate towards everyone. Everyone is in current reality, God, etc. Well, but suddenly, you know, you meet a person who talks to you rudely. Then we may, how is it? There is God present in him and he's angry. That feeling will not come to a Buddha. After becoming a Buddha, there will be no problem. There's a Buddha's life, an interesting story, you know, how he encountered Angulimala. There was a demon. A demon means he was a robber. His hobby was to kill, to rob people under after robbing, he used to cut off their fingers and make a garland, and that was his main hobby. So he was in, there was a constant demand for a new, fresh supply of fingers, human fingers, you know, because they will decay, you know. So once Buddha was walking through that forest road, so the people warned him, "You're an evil man living there who may do harm to you, so don't go that way." Buddha was not bothered. Buddha was not bothered. It disturbed him. He went, and when this evil demon, Angulimala, Angulimala means these fingers, Mala means garland. So he got that name, the one who wears this wonderful garland, you know. So when Buddha was walking, this man came. He was happy you get a fresh supply of fingers. But he couldn't catch up with Buddha, though Buddha was walking slowly. That's how the story goes. And then Buddha looked back. The Buddha's compassion, his whole expression on his face completely transformed this evil man. He took out this weapon preparatory to cutting on the fingers. But Buddha's look, there was no fear in Buddha. You know, this works with animals also. Sometimes when animals chase you, if there is no fear on your face, there's compassion, they say it works. I not tried, of course. So the point is, when he saw Buddha's face, this man was completely transformed. And he became a great saint, in fact. So the story goes like that. So when we reach that level of experience, it's something we cannot explain, then it can have a transforming effect on others. So, but that doesn't happen all of a sudden. In the process, as we are still progressing, evolving, we may encounter some problems or distractions. So how to cope with those distractions? So Patanjali is giving a very simple solution when you feel disturbed. Some people are angry unnecessarily, and some people who are so primitive, you feel contempt. Oh, this fellow doesn't know anything about yoga. It could happen. We should not have contempt. We should have sympathy. And we should be friendly with others. And we should have admiration. We should not be jealous. We should not be envious of those who are ahead of us. At the same time, when people come and talk to you in a way that creates doubt in our mind, for some people whose association could create doubts in our mind, so then we may be disturbed. So skepticism can be contagious. So how to cope with these simple problems? That's what Patanjali is dealing with. If one can resign, if one can become a great devotee of God, or a great jnani, you look upon the whole humanity as an expression of the divine, no problem. But if once that happens, there will be no problem. Before that, so I think Christ would not have used the whip after the 41 days of experience. Christ whom you see in the Sermon on the Mount is different from the Christ who took a whip and drove away the traders, the money lenders from the synagogue. So you can see that. Buddha was known as a great warrior before he became Buddha, when he was a prince. So you can find this. As they evolve, they become more and more universal. When you meet such people, if you are a genuinely good person, you cannot psychologically hate them. But there are certain people whom you cannot hate. Buddha was such a person. Not many, of course. Buddha was such a great person. So this evil man, he could not cut off Buddha's fingers. He fell at his feet because he was trying to do harm to him. And he became a great saint later. That's how the story goes. So we can continue the discussion in the next class. Thank you. Om Shanti, 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 Hari Om Tat Sat. Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu. I just want to make an announcement. It's something very important. You know, we will have a retreat, a one-day retreat in Shanti Ashrama. Shanti Ashrama is in San Antonio Valley. It's about 100 miles, less than 100 miles from here. We will have a full-day retreat on April the 28th, Saturday. The retreat will, it's a more of a solemn spiritual occasion. You know, our Vedantic movement in California began there in 1900. A disciple of Sri Ramakrishna, Swami Vivekananda's brother, disciple, brother monk, he went there and started a monastery. It is still, you know, a very calm and quiet place, about 15, 20 miles away from the nearest human settlement. So we have a retreat, one full day retreat on Saturday, April 28th. We should reach there before 11 o'clock, and the program will be over by about 5 o'clock. We will have music, discussions on spiritual topics, brief discussions, not lectures, but brief discussions, prayers and question answers. It's more of a solemn occasion. So you're all most welcome. Please, you put down your diary, April 28th, Saturday, in San Antonio Valley. You can get this, you can take this this brochure, flyer from the lobby. Thank you.